In light, I don't know if you're all following the news, but there was a very, very highly publicized news item yesterday in Israel about a certain group of people that were caught, allegedly, we have to say allegedly because it wasn't proven yet in court, right, falsifying the existence of yeshiva students in order to increase the stipends in their yeshiva. Yeah, you know this?
I didn't see that on Arutz Sheva.
Gee, go figure. You don't see that on Arutz Sheva.
It wasn't Arutz Sheva.
You know what I'm talking about?
I thought you were going to talk about a claims conference where they're falsifying calls.
That's just thieves. That's just thieves. Here we have people who outwardly are supposed to be representing values of Torah, and on the other hand, just do things that are just totally against the values of Torah. That's my question. This is my question. How do people who are supposed to speak for Torah and supposed to represent Torah, on the other hand, do things that are completely antithetical to the values for which they represent? And I'm going to ask that as a sort of broad question, because we see, in the parashiyot in which we're reading now, we confront a lot of shady behavior. Shady is the nicest way to say it. Okay? So, what I wrote down in my little title is, the fine line between shadiness and corruption.
There was a case in front of the Beis Din, one of the Beis Dins last week, where there was two builders went in and put a bid on a piece of land, and the one builder bribed the other builder to not put it, and the second builder wasn't happy with the end result, and he took it to a Beis Din, and the Beis Din ruled on it,
and he wasn't like
happy
that.
With the Beis Din ruling, so he took it to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And the Supreme Court said, how could a Beis Din rule on an agreement that was illegal to begin with?
The whole point of the agreement, right, was to obey taxes. But okay, you know.
That's
acceptable, understandable. People try to obey taxes.
But
not in the name of... I've used that word unbelievable quite a few times this week, and I think we have to be careful about unbelievable, because when you say unbelievable, you really mean is very upsetting, but unfortunately it's quite believable.
It's
yeah.
That's what's unbelievable.
So what I really would like to discuss...
Wait, exactly.
So let's get back to the parsha. What I really would like to discuss... so good, she's so right. What I really would like to discuss is the question of what I would call inside versus outside. What I mean by that is, we all have people we relate to in different ways, whether they're inside our circle or they're outside our circle. And this is not bad. This is not bad. This is totally normal, and this is totally acceptable. And I would say we build for ourselves concentric circles. Right? Circles of, I don't know, wasn't there some guy in a movie, circles of trust? I think there was like a mob movie like that. So it's circle. We all have circles of trust. In the very center of the circle are the ones we love the most. A little outside the circle, you know, closer relatives, more distant relatives. Outside that circle, we would probably put
friends.
Sometimes then maybe
friends are in the middle.
Community.
What? Community, Jews, and then the rest of the world. And this is normal, and it's very natural for us to do. And just to give you a simple example, right? I come to Tammy and I say, her son comes to her and he says, Mom, I need 100 shekel. So, without thinking, I mean, she'll probably wonder what the 100 shekel is for, but it's not a question of the money. Okay? She'd be happy to give the 100 shekel. I come to Tammy and I say, I need 100 shekel. I just happen to know Tammy, she'd probably give me the money anyway. You know what I'm saying? But she'd probably think, okay, but then she'd be happy to give me the money. Someone comes to her door and asks her for 100 shekel. Would you give him 100 shekel?
Probably.
Oh, my God, really? I'm not...
What?
Right. Someone comes up to her in what's the name of the airport in India?
He's in Hyderabad.
Right, Hyderabad Airport in wherever that city is, right? And says, can I please have 100 shekel?
He'll give him 100 rupees.
Which is?
10 shekel.
He would give him 10 shekel. Well, so we have unusually generous people. But to see the circle is going down and down and down. So for me, my son asked me for 10 shekel. I'm happy to give him 10 shekel. But somebody comes to my door and asks me for 10 shekel.
Where's the letter from the
bus? Yeah, well, and I actually asked him for ID, because I want to see if that they're the person that's written out in the letter, which is a worthwhile thing to do.
And
do they come to your door at 10 o'clock at night?
Sure. You're asking me for a letter?
I don't answer the door.
What do you mean you don't answer?
No, I need
that. Ah, so great. Can you imagine that? So that's exactly my point. This is the circles, the different circles of trust. And it's also true... And we're also describing...
Really?
we're describing what?
There's less people the further we are in. That's what she's saying. The less people you get.
I would think, really? You get less and less? You're already too far to walk? Yeah.
We get.
Okay.
But I've seen, like, after I've like, walked down the street and I've seen, oh gosh, those guys will never get to us and they don't.
So it's interesting that this is, we do this not only in the way we judge people, the way we treat them, the way we relate to them, whether inside or outside. So for example, when somebody does something, do we give them the benefit of the doubt? Or do we give them preferential treatment? Or do we hold them to the letter of the law? Let's say, you're a policeman, right? You stop somebody because their lights aren't on in the winter because you have to give tickets because that's your job. Okay, so you stop them and you stop it. It turns out it's your mother, right? Oh, hi, Mom. Have a nice day. Okay? And what is our job when the policeman stops us, of course?
Cry.
What?
Cry. That's what I want to
do. You want to convince them that... Does it work here in Israel?
It does. It works.
Really?
Not from women. Not from women.
Not from women. Your job, our job, and he knows it, and he's probably trained to avoid it, is to get inside that circle of the line, get beyond the line where he would give you the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, fine, whatever, I'll let you off with a warning. You understand what I'm saying? Where he's going to treat you like his mother and not like his next-door neighbor or the guy he doesn't like from work. And so then the question really becomes, where do we draw that line? Because where you draw that line is really critical in how we decide how we interact with people. And what we see in this week's parasha is the line is misdrawn. The line is all messed up. As we'll soon see. So I would ask you inside versus outside. Who's inside the circle and outside the circle? Yaakov or Esav? Who's inside the circle and who's outside the circle?
For whom?
Should be outside.
What about for their mother?
Both.
They should be inside, except what does the mother do? Right.
No.
Right? Right. What does the mother do? Of course, she loves her son, except when the time comes to make the choice, the preferential treatment, one gets and one doesn't. Yaakov versus Lavan. Right? Who's inside and outside?
Well, for Rachel, what do you mean?
That's the question. Right, for whom? But is Lavan the dear, beloved father-in-law and grandfather of my children?
No.
What?
No.
No. And that's really the crux of the issue of the Parsha. Right? Do I see you as my beloved father-in-law? Or do you treat me like...
A servant.
Like Drek. A servant. Like Halavai, you treat me like a servant. You trick me. You deceive me. You take every advantage of me. And now, and Lavan comes back at the end and says... What does Lavan say to them at the end? When he comes back and he's arguing with them, he says, I'm the grandfather of your children. Would I harm you? And the obvious answer is
yes.
Right. But again, it's interesting when you look at it in that perspective, it's an inside versus outside question. Lavan, were you treating me like I'm a member of the tribe, of the clan, or were you treating me like a stranger? You treating me like anybody else. And the whole time, he's treating me like anybody else. But Yaakov's problem the whole time was...
You wanted him to be outside.
Right, well, Yaakov's problem was Lavan was treating him like an outsider. And Yaakov was treating him like an insider. You know, you often see in work situations it's like that. Like, you treat your employees or your coworkers, how you treat them. What's the difference how you treat them? No, that's the real question. Do you want them to associate it like, I work here, I do my job, and I leave? Like, I'm an outsider. Or do you want them to treat you like an insider? You know what I'm saying? And there's a connection, there's a care. And that's all the difference in the world, to be honest with you, whether the business thrives or it doesn't. Whether they're devoted to it, whether they're committed to it or not.
That's why they have all these group hug weekends.
Yeah.
To bond.
But it's important. Yosef or the brothers? Right? Yosef or the brothers?
Who's an outsider?
Yosef. To the brothers. What about from Yaakov's perspective?
He was the inside.
Yeah. And the brothers?
Outside.
On the outside. Shechem and Dinah. Yaakov vis-a-vis Shechem and Dinah. Well, Shechem is supposed to be, Dina is supposed to be inside, of course. She's the daughter, right? But when Shechem comes and wants to make a deal, how does Shechem say it? Hey, we're all, it's like, let's get married, we're all friends. And what do the brothers say? Why?
She's inside their outside.
That's right. The brothers say, Hachazona yaseh et achotenu. That's our sister. This is not some woman where you're, you know, you're making a business deal and you're trying to come to an arrangement. This is our sister. There's an inside and there's an outside. So the question becomes how you define and where the lines of demarcation come, where you set the lines of demarcation, and what happens when that goes astray. And I think, by the way, this is really what we want to teach our children as family. That there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with saying, and I think this is something that people misunderstand about Judaism in general, this is your family. You have an obligation to be there for your family, and they have an obligation to be there for you. Right? And it's not the same vis-a-vis everybody else. Right? We're connected in a stronger bond. We have a tighter circle. So you'll do for your family things you won't do for other people. You'll be there for them in the ways you won't necessarily be for other people. You know, and to be honest with you, family needs to see that. They need to see that their parent will be there for them more than they'll be there for somebody else. They often say that. That's a big complaint in rabbinic families, right? That the children complain that you were there for everybody else, but you weren't there for me. Right? That you didn't show me preferential treatment. Children need preferential treatment. They need to be treated like children. You're not the same as everybody else. What? They are special to us. To us. They're our children. And when they don't feel that specialness, then they feel pain. Because they know intuitively that that's the way it's supposed to be. As we see that the brothers did. So that's something to remember, that there's supposed to be a special treatment. There's supposed to be a preferential. There's supposed to be the sense of inside versus outside. And that's, by the way, people have a lot of trouble with the idea that the Torah gives preferential treatments to Jews. Well, it's a question. I mean, right. But not chosen people vis-a-vis everybody else that were better. But let's say, for example, the laws of interest. Well, you're not allowed to charge interest to Jews. But you are allowed to charge interest to outside. Is there something wrong? Is there something to a fellow Jew? But you're not allowed outside. Now, is there something inherently wrong with charging interest? No. Nobody would say that interest is immoral or unethical.
I was thinking about this with wine. I was like, if I weren't Jewish, I'd be totally offended by the thought that if I touched your wine, it is now contaminated.
Right.
And no longer,
you have to throw out
kosher.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's just the same thing. You know, a non-Jew can't touch wine. That has, you know.
That is kind of insulting, though. That's more about avodah zarah. That is more about idolatry as opposed to... It's not that it's like the close family. It's not that we treat each other better. It is that we assume you're bad. What?
Same thing with the line of division.
Right. But the idea is conveying this notion that... what's the whole purpose of these kinds of preferential mitzvot? To connect that we are brothers. That we are connected to one another, that we have a special bond, and we should give each other preferential treatment. And things go bad, real bad, when that line, the inside versus outside, breaks down. When I start treating the person that's supposed to be on the inside like he's on the outside. And this previous confusion, only leads to this week's confusion. Okay, I don't want to go, I'm not going to do Yaakov giving the coat. Right, let's all...
You're like, for example, I mean, like you said, it's still an accusation, but these people that were accused, they're really like doing something morally wrong and totally illegal versus like somebody who's not Jewish but who's like a very good and moral person. It's like we're still supposed to consider the Jews more on the inside.
My question, yes, of course, but my question really is, what allowed those people to think that they could go do this thing? Meaning it's not like when you start creating a fake document factory, it's not like, it's not a spur of the moment kind of thing anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a quick decision. So in some way, they had to be able to morally justify what they were doing.
Well, they were saying that it was
Lina Turakata
that were using...
Great, but then they don't take money from the government either.
They don't take it. Turakata don't.
Right.
So they were taking the Turakata's names.
Really?
They were taking existing people.
They also made up people.
That's still illegal.
But the question becomes...
Like in Russia,
Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. And therefore... That's right. I'm not saying it's correct, but you begin to wonder who is on the inside and who is on the outside. Would you do that to your parents? Would you falsify documents to steal from your parents? No, you wouldn't. But you would do it to some overarching oppressive outsider. who deserves it, or who doesn't know better, or who doesn't appreciate. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning, this is how, by the way, we think, this is how we justify behaving badly to other people. Right? They're not in my circle. And the worse you are, the tighter your circle is. Let's turn to Vayeshev. We'll learn a few psukim, and hopefully you'll see what I mean. Okay? We'll turn to Vayeshev Lamed Zayin. Lamed Zayin. Okay? Pasuk Yud Bet. It's going to start on Shani. Perek Lamed Zayin, chapter 37, Pasuk Yud Bet. So the brothers hate Yosef. Why do they hate him? They hate him for two reasons. They hate him because, well, what's the main reason they hate him?
He's so connected to Yaakov.
What?
He's so connected to Yaakov.
Right. Well, not that he's so connected to Yaakov.
Yaakov's so connected to
Correct.
Him.
Yaakov prefers him. They hate him because their father gives him preferential treatment. Right? And he doesn't hide it at all. Yeah, it's so interesting. I saw Or HaChaim maybe a Ramban. Who asked a very simple question. If the brothers hated Yaakov so much, why didn't they confront him? Yeah, if Yosef is so arrogant and so annoying, and he's lording it over them, he's 17. So why don't they go slap him around a little bit and say, hey kid, stop. And the farshim that he says, the pshat I saw says that the reason is because they saw Yaakov justified that preferential treatment. What's the point of slapping around your brother if your father's doing it too? There was no way for them to really get to him because he would just say, I'm telling Dad. I'm supposed to be not act haughty? Talk to your father. Loser. You know what I mean? It's like, so they couldn't directly talk to him. So they hate him mostly because of his father's treatment and also because Yosef lords it over them. You guys see the dream I had? Great. Vayelchu echav lirot etzon avihem b'shem. Right, the brothers went to shepherd the sheep of their father in Shechem. Where are they living? Where are they living? Where were they until now? Beretz Migurei Aviv, Vayeshev Yaakov, Beretz Migurei Aviv. Where were they? Right, I think they were in Beit El, somewhere down north. Anybody know what the area looks like in Beit El? What the topography is in Beit El?
Mountainous,
rocky. Would there be place to shepherd your sheep in Beit El? More than in Shechem? Is it any different in Beit El or in Shechem? Of course it is. Have you ever seen Arabs with herds of sheep? What? Pretty much. Right. You know, as long as there's mountains and shrubs, you don't need like lush lawns and you know what I'm saying of England. Right? So the question is, why did they go to Shechem? Okay. Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef, and I have no idea why he's Yisrael here. Halo achicha, achecha ro'im b'shchem. Your brothers are shepherding in Shechem. Lecha v'esh lechecha aleihem. Let me send them to you. Vayomer lo hineni. No problem, Dad. Vayomer lam yedalad. Vayomer lo lechna re'e et shlom achecha v'shlom hatzon v'ashiveni davar. Right, please tell me how your brothers are doing and how the sheep are doing, and get back to me. Send and tell me again. Vayishlacheu me'emek Chevron. Oh, that's what they were in Chevron. Vayavosh Shechema. He sent them from the valley of Chevron, and they went and he went to Shechem. Now, it only just also shows you how not clued in Yaakov is to this hatred between the brothers. Because what did he essentially send Yosef to do?
Go to the lion's den.
Right, and do what? But send him for what purpose?
To be his messenger. To
spill on him.
That's a South African term, right? To snitch, right? To spill on them, right? To rat on them. That's what we say. He's telling them to snitch. Like, go, bring me back a report. The brothers, they can't stand him. Great. Vayimtzeehu ish. This is one of those very, very cryptic stories. A man found some guy. V'hinei to'eh basadeh. Vayimtzeehu. So a man found him, and he was to'eh, wandering in the field. And the man tells him, says to him, what are you looking for? Vayomar, he says, et achai anochi mivakesh. Hagidani li nali efo heim roim. I'm looking for my brothers. Can you please tell me where are they shepherding? Because he goes to Shechem. It's interesting how independent people are. Could you imagine, like, you've never been there before? I think I've been there once before. He travels by himself. He's going to find his brothers. Can you tell me where my brothers are? Vayomer ha'ish, says the man, nasu mize. Right? They left this place. Ki shamati omrim, I heard that they are saying, nilcha dotaina. Let's go to Dotan. Vayelech Yosef achar echav. Yosef went after his brothers. Vayimtza'em bidotan. And he found them in Dotan. Who's the man?
I was just going to say, who's this guy?
Yeah. What? What do you mean? He found some. In the pshat, the simple pshat is.
Gabriel.
Very good. What is that? Wait, what's that? Let's talk about the simple pshat. The simple pshat is he found some guy. He's looking for his brothers. So what happens when you're looking for your brothers? You find some guy, right? And you say, have you seen my brothers? Because obviously, there's no cell phones. There's no, you know, email. You don't know where they are. They're not staying at some inn. They're shepherding in the middle of the field. He goes up to around the area and he starts asking around, have you found my brothers? And the guy says, oh, I heard they went to Dotan. If that's the pshat, though, that creates a problem. What's the problem with that pshat? No problem? The problem is it's irrelevant. You think this is the first person Yosef asked for directions from? How many people did Yosef have to get to in order to get to his brothers? That's normal and natural. Right? What happens when, you know, you're traveling, they think they didn't have maps, they didn't have anything. You know, oh, it's Shechem this way? So Yosef got to Yerushalayim, and he stayed at an inn, and he had coffee for supper, and then he got up in the, like, and he asked the guy, have you ever, you know, do you know where Shechem is? And they said, yeah, keep going north, follow the, like, that's the story, right? He said, I went to this place, some guy found him in the field, he said, I'm looking for my brothers, he said, oh, they left, they went that way, thanks. You need to know this information?
Obviously we do.
Right. So therefore, comes on the Midrash and says, this is not some man. This is not any man. Who is this? What is this? I am saying, Eish, Rashi. Who is he?
Gabriel.
Ze Gavriel. Shneemar v'ha'ish Gavriel. What?
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
What?
You don't have to think that Hashem aided him to find his brothers to... Well,
Wow, 1 second. So what does the angel Gabriel... What does the angel Gabriel symbolize? Mi, mi, ni. What do we say at night? Mi, mi, ni. Where's Gabriel in there? He's at the left? He's at the above? From what I remember, and I'm not into my angelology. Right, no. Gabriel represents Hashgachat Hashem. He's like God's messenger in the world to bring about God's plan. So then the question becomes, what was God's plan? What was the message Gabriel was sent to send? So he says, Nas'u, the man said, in your Zion, Nas'u mizeh. Look at the Rashi. Unbelievable Rashi. They left here. Look at Rashi. Hisiu atzman min ha'achva. Nas'u mizeh. They left this place. What place did they leave? Hisiu atzman. They remove themselves, min ha'achva, from brotherhood. Yeah. Says Rashi, Gabriel came along to tell Yosef, I wouldn't go there if I were you. Right. They are no longer your brothers. I'm looking for my brothers. The man said, my friend, you haven't got any brothers. They moved on. Which means...
He's got a dilemma.
Well, not a dilemma. You're asking for trouble. Real trouble.
Well, it's a dilemma, because if he listens to the, you know, and turns his back, then he's disregarding what his father has asked him. His father has asked him to do something. He has to do it.
Ramban is wondering. Ramban says, you know, if the guy had told him explicitly... then Yosef would have ignored his father's instructions. If he really felt he was in danger, he would have ignored them. Ramban says, "Avakavana lahem ki yaish Gavriel, the man Gavriel, Asher." Don't you have Ramban?
Yeah, no,
that's okay.
One instead of two.
Oh, sorry. Okay, man Gavriel, Asher higid lo higid emet. Gavriel told the truth. This is a very deep comment. The amar lashon mishamesh lishnei panim. But he said something that could be interpreted in two ways. Ushnehem emet. and both were true. V'hulo hevin hanistar bo. He did not understand the hidden meaning. Meaning, Yosef went, and Gavriel's trying to warn him, but Gavriel can't warn him explicitly. Gavriel, for whatever reason...
Because you can't reveal that he's a man.
Whatever, can't reveal he's an angel. God doesn't want to have an explicit hand in the events of history. God has a hidden hand in the events of history. However you want to say it. And comes along Gavriel, and he says, your brothers are gone. It's almost like you have no brothers. They're left. They're gone. And he said, well, where'd they go? They're just gone. Which way did they go? They went that way. I don't know. Who knows even where your brothers are even around anymore? You know what I'm saying? What?
He overheard them speaking, so he was.
Who heard them?
Gabriel.
I heard them say they're going to Dothan.
Right.
I was taken by this Ramban because we all get caught on this idea of we choose how we want to interpret what it is we hear and what it is we see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And we decide, how often we decide in this decision of the inside versus the outside, right? We want to hear what we want to hear. Yosef does not want to hear your brothers have abandoned you and you're in danger. Since he doesn't want to hear it, I'm willing to bet Gabriel could have told him, your brothers want to kill you. They have a gun and they're going to shoot you. And Yosef would have said, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like we when you want to hear something...
But sometimes you hear
I have some personal experience with this week. When you are right, and you know you're right, it doesn't matter what anybody tells you at all. It could be staring you in the face, and anybody else in the world will look at it and say, what are you, crazy? But
retrospectively, he might hear it differently.
Oh, yeah, probably. When he's sitting in that pit, and he's saying, that's what he meant.
I'm even going further down.
But what's the phrase in Hebrew? You know the phrase in Hebrew? Nafalo ha'asimon. You know that phrase? You should know that phrase. It's an important. We'll do a little ulpan, right? You all remember when we came like before the old payphones? You know the old payphones?
Right?
You do really? You know what I'm talking about? The asimonium, right? And so like. I remember when we used to call America, you used to put like 10 in, and it would just go, ching, 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 you know, like, so the phrase, nafalo asimon, means it clicked.
But I'm even saying even further down the road, like, even once he was in, you know, he had to get to Mitzrayim, and he had to go to Cairo so that he could later help his family. He had to go through all those things. Maybe when his brothers came to him later at that point, when he could have also hear that same lesson, they left, they didn't know what they were,
I don't understand.
That means to justify, like, so he could
in his own mind.
In his own mind, he might have.
You're looking in the long term. Okay, you want to say the whole thing is Hashem's plan. That's great. That's true. Obviously, we all believe that the whole thing is the Ratzon Hashem, that God is playing out the events in history. That does not absolve us from the actions that we take. You know, it reminds me of a very famous family story in my personal family. When my brother was, I think, 10, and my youngest brother was 4. So apparently the 10-year-old brother did something to annoy my 4-year-old brother, got him upset. So there was a set of 5 steps that went from our kitchen to the basement, and my 4-year-old brother tried to push the 10-year-old down the steps. And so he was really mad, but he wasn't strong enough to do it. So the 10-year-old says to my mother, says, Mom, you tried to push me down the stairs. And the 4-year-old looks at him and says, Yair, things happen in life. I'll never forget it. Yes. Things do happen in life, you know, very deep. Things do happen in life, but we bear responsibility for what we bring about. Okay, let's move. So that it's very interesting. The Rashi is very deep, right? They have removed themselves as brothers, meaning what? Exactly this issue. They no longer see Yosef as someone to protect who deserves preferential treatment. They now see him as an outsider. What do you do to an outsider who you see as threatening you?
Get rid of him.
That's right. What do you do to a brother who you see as threatening you? Right. You try to address. Those are very different things. But if they remove themselves from the brotherhood, once you do that, that now justifies a whole range of behaviors that before was previously unthinkable, unimaginable, that now the brothers are apparently willing to consider. Okay? And I think we'll see this in the Psukim as we read on. We'll see some in the Psukim and also in some of the Midrashim.
Why did they skip out on that step? Why didn't they say to him categorically, you no longer brother?
Because he'd go back to his father and talk.
I was saying, once they decide it, why would they tell it to him? Now he's an outsider.
But they just ignore him.
He's a threat to them. He's not? You can't ignore him. He's a threat to them. He came to snitch on them. What's he here for? Ignore him. What did they do? They went to Shem. And look, oh, look who shows up. Who shows up?
Snitch.
The snitch. Let's see what they say. Okay?
Sounds like a Roald Dahl.
What?
Sounds like a Roald Dahl.
All good stories. All well done stories surround these issues. No, these issues.
No.
The issues of, we'll call them fidelity and trust and trying to decide, you know, where to draw the line between closeness and not closeness. You know what I'm saying? All mafia stories are like that. Are you in the family or outside the family?
Mm-hmm.
The Havdil, as it were. That's exactly the question. Do you deserve fidelity or not? Didn't I try to quote The Godfather? And none of you had ever read it? So then I'm not going to try again. Okay. Yurchet. Vayir'u oto me'rachok. Right? They saw him from afar. U'beterem yikrav aleihem. And before they even came close to them, Vayitnachlu oto lahamito. This language is hard to explain, hard to translate. Vayitnachlu oto. The word vayitnachlu is actually a little tricky to translate in and of itself. What's the root of the word nachel from nun chaf lamin? Okay, we find it again in Parshat Pinchas. Minichlehem asher nichlu lachem al devar peor.
Yes, it's conspired.
The conspiracy. Okay? But let's look at the conjugation of the word. Vayitnachlu. How is it conjugated? Right, conspiracy, but conspiracy is actually an excellent word. Because many in the Farshim look at the word as trying to mean to think bad thoughts about. To conspire. That's exactly what it is. Well said. Okay? Think the squirrel. Actually, sometimes it's interesting. Sometimes English has very precise words. You know, the word conspiracy is a really good word. Okay? What is vayitnaklu? What is the conjugation there? That's right. Hitpael. Reflexive. Vayitnaklu. They. Right. And it's interesting. In as I quoted to you in Pinchas, b'nichlehem asher nichlu lachem. Vayinaklu. So what's vayitnaklu? They conspire themselves? Okay, vayidnaklu. And how would you say it? What's the next word you would say? Vayidnaklu. What would be the next word? Lo. Very good. Right. And remember again and again the other. Yeah. What can I tell you? Right. Vinichlechem, asher nichlu lachem. Right. In the conspiracy that they conspired to you against you, but it's not vayidnaklu oto, and they conspired of him, lahamito. So we're gonna have to address. What in the world is going on here? So Rashi, look at Rashi. Rashi, you just know, is very sensitive to these linguistic problems. Vayitnaklu, nitmalu nichlim ve'armumiyut. Nitmalu. See Rashi. By the way, he's addressing both of our questions. First question, Rashi says, why is it reflexive? Why they filled themselves up with conspiracy, and it's not they conspired, they consumed themselves with conspiracy. Okay. Oto, says Rashi, kimo ito, imo, kilomar, elav. How does Rashi answer our second question? Why does it say oto and not lo? Says Rashi. What does he say? Essentially, he says that's what it means. He says, in this context, that's what it means. Oto means elav, towards him, lo. Okay? First question, how do you like Rashi's answers? Now I'm like treading on Rina's ground, I think. But how do you like Rashi's answers to that question? We have two questions. Why is it in the heat pa'el? And why does it say oto instead of elav or lo? So he gives you answers. And the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, am I convinced by those answers?
Not really.
So what are you looking for? Better answer. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Meaning, if it was really meant a lav, if the Torah really meant a lav, then you're left with a simple question. Why not just say that? Why is it telling us by saying the word oto? Yeah.
I was thinking that maybe it's like it backfired on them. Like,
Okay.
In the end, they have to, you know, appear in front of him, and it, like, the whole thing backfired.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like really conspiring against himself.
Nice. Very nice. Okay.
Sure.
Very good. Okay. That's really nice. So Vayit Naklu, meaning what? I'll tie it back to my theme. What was there to conspire against Yosef?
They were trying to get into the inner circle with Yaakov.
Well, right. They were trying to keep him on the outside. Right? And in the essence, in the end, what were they really doing?
Isolating themselves.
Right. Vayit Naklu. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Let's go on. But I'm going to give you Sforno later. I'm just I'm setting you up. And that's really nice stuff. Vayamru Ish El Achiv. Look into the language. The language is so telling here. Vayamru Ish El Achiv. Hine Baal HaChalomot Hazeba. And each one said to his brother, behold, the dreamer hath come. Right. Why am I so stuck on this pasuk? What do I find so interesting about this pasuk?
Well, they're already using names for him. They're not referring to him as his brother.
Correct. And even more than that, because the next level?
It's not related to Yaakov. It's related to Yosef himself.
Right.
It's saying here comes the favorite child. It's here comes the man with his
dream. Oh, interesting. Okay. Here comes the dreamer. But in addition to what you said about they relate to Yosef not as a brother, what in addition, what do they do? They relate to each other as brothers. Brotherhood is already in the pasuk. Vayomru ish el achiv. You know what all the brothers said? Here comes the dreamer, the other guy. And they don't even address him by name. Correct. Absolutely correct. Right? In order to, that's exactly what I'm saying, in order to justify their behavior, you always see before you justify their behavior, what? Yeah, you always see before you, thank you, before you justify your behavior, it's unbelievable. Before you justify the behavior, you have to justify it in your mind. You have to understand why you're doing it in order to do something premeditated. Va'ata, pasuk chav, l'chu v'nahar gehu, v'nashlicheu b'yachad ha-barot, v'amarnu chayar ba'a'achalatu, v'nir'eh ma'yiyu chalamotav. Right, now let's go and kill him. Throw him in a pit, and we'll say he got eaten up by a wild animal. And let's see what happens to his dreams.
Doesn't specify which brother said
it? No. Right,
they were
Rashi
a collective
does.
Unit.
What?
They were a collective unit.
Rashi says it was. Rashi says, 1 second. Maybe not Rashi. The Midrash says it's Shimon and Levi. Because they're always the rabble rousers. Right? Shimon and Levi are the hot headed ones. But that's not in Pshat. It's only in the drash. Pasuk Chafalef, Vayishmar Uven Vayatzilehu Miyadam, Vayomer Lo Nakenu Nafesh. Uven hears this. He saves him. He says, "It's almost like he gets him out of trance." Says, "Are you guys nuts? We're not killing anybody. Rather, Vayomer Uven Chafet Al Tishbichudam Hashlichu Oto El Habor Hazeh Asher Bamidbar Vayar Al Tishbichubo." Leman hatzil oto miadam lashivo el aviv. Right? Why does Reuven save Yosef? Is it out of a sense of morality, fealty to his brother, uprightness, and justice? Right. Correct. Yosef might not be in our circle, but Dad is way in our circle. Well in our circle. And for whatever reason, sadly, in our circle of trust, right, we might have drawn Yosef out of the circle, but unfortunately Dad has got a circle, and there's this overlapping circle of Yosef, us, and Dad. Okay? And there's no way around that. So while we might want to have him out, our father has him in. What's going to happen if he doesn't show up?
Big trouble.
Look at Rashi, and then I'll read you a midrash. Okay? Rashi says, Leman hatziloto. Okay? Ruach hakodesh yida aruven. Right? This is the Torah speaking. And it's telling us about Reuven. Shelo amazot ela lahatziloto. He said it to save them. Sheyavohu v'yidlena misha. Meaning Reuven never had any intention of selling him. And it's quite clear that he didn't have any intention of selling him. Rather, but what motivated him? Amar, Ani bechor vegadol shebekulam. I'm the oldest. Lo yitle asirchon ela bi. Who's going to take the fall for what's going to happen with dad? That would be me. So all of your dreams about killing Yosef, on the one hand, very nice, you might hate his guts, but I have responsibilities. Not to Yosef, it's interesting. Right? It's almost like, why am I not going to do this? For me, not for him. Not because it's right. Says the Midrash, 1 second. It's interesting. Midrash says it, interestingly, in a little bit different way. Rabbanon Amru. The Rabbanon say, Amar Reuven. Reuven said, Humone oti im achai ve'eini matzilo. He counted me amongst his brothers, and I won't save him.
When did
Yosef count him? When? Ani hayiti savor. I thought, shenidachti mikoach oto ma'aseh. Remember Reuven, there's a very cryptic story about the bed of Bilha. That when Rachel died, he took the beds and he messed up the beds. You're familiar with what I'm saying with last week's parasha? Yeah. There's a very, very cryptic story way back in last week's parasha about when they came in and right after the death of Rachel. Okay. And Torah says, one second. No. Here we are. Vayihi bishkon Yisrael. This is in Lamed Hei Chaf Bet. You don't have to look it up because I'm going to just read it quickly. Bishkon Yisrael baretz ahi, when they were dwelling in that land. Vayevech Reuven. Reuven went. Vayishkab et Bilha pilegish aviv. Vayishma Yisrael. In the pasuk pshat, in simple understanding, Reuven slept with his father's wife. Hard to imagine. So Rashi says he didn't do that. It didn't happen. Rashi says hu bilbel et amitot, that he was acting out on behalf of his mother. Once Rachel died, so it was Bilha's night, you know what I'm saying? And Reuven gave his mother preference over this other woman, over this other wife. Now, why he's in, like, you know, and the whole thing is inappropriate. Why are you getting involved in this? It's your father's married life. So Reuven says to the father, according to the Midrash, I thought that I was put out of the picture. I thought that I was no longer counted as one of the brothers. V'hu mone oti im achai. And he counted me as one of the brothers. When? Shene Amar, as it says, Va'achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li. Right? When Yosef had his dream, how many stars bowed down to him? 11 stars. Not 10. Ve'eini matzilo. Meaning, according to this midrash, why does Reuven save Yosef? Because in his dominance over his brothers, he counted me as one of them. Oh, because of the whole episode with Bilha. He thought he was just written out of the picture. And Yosef said, no, Reuven, even though I'm going to lord over you like I lord over the rest of them. That's what he said. And Reuven said, ah, my brother. You know what I mean? That's what the Midrash says. But so interesting is...
Interesting reason.
What?
Such interesting reason.
The Midrash is very deep. Right? Because the Midrash says that the brothers, they remove themselves from the brotherhood. And Reuven comes and saves Yosef, or tries to. Why? Because he didn't paint Yosef out of his circle. He said, he treated me like a brother. Okay, he's an annoying brother, he's a dumb brother, but he's my brother. So I'm not going to save my brother. You know, it's really, you know, so interesting.
Now, yeah. You have a completely different reason for all of that, for all of this, in that they knew that the tribes are going to come from, were going to come from them. And to kill Yosef, they would have blood on their hands.
Oh, there's a really funny little internet video going around about whether the Avot, did you see it? Whether the Avot knew what was going on in the future or not. It's like, did you see it?
Right,
some guy gives a Dvar Torah about why Yaakov, it's animated, so it's funny. Why did Yaakov give Esav, the Midrash says that Yaakov gave Esav bread with his lentil soup. So he says, why did Yaakov give Esav bread with his lentils? So he said, because there's a machloket in the Gemara about what the bracha on lentils are. Is it mizonot or hadama? So in order for Esav to make the proper bracha, so it wouldn't be in a suffix, he gave him bread. So he'd wash and then he'd, you know, eat the lentils without having a suffix bracha. So the other guy just goes into this whole thing about, you've got to be kidding me, that, you know, the Gemara didn't exist, there was never any hamotzi. Are you telling me that, you know, Yaakov knew the future? You tell me, see, she's bothered by his Esav, he didn't care about the bracha, but you tell me Yaakov knew the future, he goes, yeah, of course Yaakov knew the future. Of course Yaakov kept all the mitzvahs. So he says, well, if Yaakov knew all the mitzvah, he knew the Torah, why don't he just look in the Torah and see that his son Yosef is still alive?
Did he wear Crocs on
Tisha B'Av? Right, he goes, that's right. He goes, no, no, he didn't. Rabbi Yashiv said, no, Crocs are not allowed. It's really, 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 very clever. So, I'm sorry, ask me your question again because I got totally sidetracked. Why didn't he?
I take the
Tzvatim and their actions at the time. I think it's very hard to say that they're acting on such long-term destiny decisions. I don't know. I'm trying to analyze them as people. If you look at them only as archetypes and in the future, then you can't really understand anything that they do. You know, because if they saw themselves as scions of Klal Yisrael and the Shiftei Ka, they never would have done any of this. You know, the whole story that we're not going to get to of Yehuda and Tamar. Yeah, that, there's no way getting around the idea that Yehuda hired a prostitute. Right? Okay, it wasn't a prostitute. It happened to have been his daughter-in-law. But between you and me, if you knew what you were going to be doing was recorded in the Torah for posterity. Right? For all Jews to read on a yearly basis and study and analyze. Right? Would we be surfing the internet at, 10 o'clock at night, every night? Right? And she clicked on the link. And then she surfed that website. I don't think we would. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to analyze him in that long-term sense. Would we? I don't know. I wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? Ironically, we are being recorded, and it is for posterity, but whatever. Okay. So, what happened when the brother said... what is this? Vayomer Yehuda. Did I skip? No. Yes, I did skip. We have to wrap it up. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayikasher ba Yosef el Echav. Remember, Yosef came to his brothers. There's always that trick. He thinks they're the brothers. They don't. Vayashitu et Yosef et kutanto. Ve'ketonet ha-pasim alei asher alav. They stripped his ketonet, his coat. They hated that coat. Vayikachehu, vayashlichu oto habora. They threw him into the well. V'habor reik ein bo mayim. Okay? Simple understanding. What are the implications of the fact that the well has no water in it? What?
It's not a well, it's a pit.
The pit. What is the civic significance of the fact that the pit has no water?
I think it hurts when you get thrown in.
Well, it depends how deep the pit is.
Yeah, so I have that water, and also he's not going
to
drown.
Right, he won't drown. They did not kill him. That's a simple understanding, because if they threw him in a well or in a pit that was full of water, he would drown. Okay?
Vayeshvu le'echol
lechem.
They are leaving him there without water.
Okay, but you don't know how long they left him there for. It's unclear. It seems right now they just sat down to sit to eat bread. This is, by the way, the most
weird,
right, the most disturbing piece of the story. Yeah. Right? They throw their brother in a pit and
sit down to eat.
Wow, I'm hungry. You know what I'm saying? The fact that they could sit down to eat is so disturbing because what does it tell us?
They have a clear conscience.
Correct. They have a clear conscience. That's the most shocking thing. Like when you do something, and by the way, like did they go sit down, like, you know, how far away were they? Like, what is Yosef saying?
He's probably calling.
Hey, guys.
Right.
It's over.
Right. Okay, you know, I'm... This is not funny anymore. You know? How old is he? 17. You know, and he's in the pit. And he's calling to them. So maybe they say, you know, do we really need to hear this? Let's move on down the road a little bit. Okay, Yehuda says, Ma betza ki naharog et achinu b'chisinu et amo. In order to convince the brothers not to kill him, what does he say?
There's no money in it if he's dead.
Well, no. In what?
We're profited if we let.
In doing what?
And conceal his blood.
In doing what?
So what if we kill him and we don't...
Kill who?
Yosef.
No.
Her brother.
That's right.
Right.
Right? He's moved. They want to kill him. He's outside the circle. Yehuda's trying to
bring him in
a little bit. How far in?
Not much.
Just a little bit. Okay. L'chuvinim kerenu l'yishmeilim v'yadenu al tihiyu bo. Why? Ki achinu b'sarenu hu. Because he is our brother.
flesh and blood.
What?
Our flesh and blood.
Our flesh and blood. Inside the circle, outside the circle, inside the circle, outside. It's kind of get confusing, mm-hmm. You know?
It seems like Yaakov is actually getting pushed out of the circle, because it's not saying, how can we do this to our father?
Mm-hmm.
They still do it to their father by giving him the same story, even though, you know, they bring back his coat covered in blood, and, you know, nothing here is done for the benefit of Yaakov, which is sort of all along, sort of.
But they push him out of the picture. They have to almost in order to do it. I agree with you. Like, you know, Reuben is the only one that's thinking about the ramifications for Yaakov. They tell themselves, what do they tell themselves? What do they tell themselves in the end when they do this? And they tell themselves, he'll get over it. They hope they'll get over it.
But I'm saying, he doesn't justify to his brothers as, how can we go back to our father with this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? He actually says he's our brother, which I think is sort of interesting. Right? And that it's
meaning as opposed to Reuben, who says, "How can we do this to our father?"
Easier argument for Reuben to convince his brothers by saying, "Dad's gonna kill us for this."
Yeah.
Right, but he doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. He actually takes. I think he presents the more difficult to to accept argument.
Not Reuben,
Judah. See, but it's interesting. Well, what he couldn't. One second, Judah. But what he couldn't say, he can't say Dad's gonna kill us. You know why? Because either way, he's not coming home. Either way, Dad's going to think he's dead.
But they still don't have his coat and blood. And they could have just said, like, we don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like, the kind of hell.
That is interesting.
Are we our brother's keeper?
That is correct. That is so interesting. Like, what we said, Dad, we sent him home. Except, what do they want? Now, the reason they did that, I think. Why did they?
They want him to be out of
that's
the
right. They want closure. They want, so this is also, the shear we're not giving is the sneakiness that they try to use is to get what they want and have their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. They want to get away with the perfect crime.
Otherwise, Yaakov would become obsessed with finding him.
Correct.
He thought he might be alive.
Correct. Oh, okay, I'm out of time. Says the Sforno. Let's go back to, I have a Sforno and a Midrash and we'll wrap it up. Vayidnaklu oto lahamito. Remember I pointed that pasuk in pasuk yurchet? Mm-hmm. They conspired, they self-conspired of him. Okay? Says the Sforno. Shabalehem Loli Drosh Shlomam. Yosef, why did Yosef come? He didn't come to see how they're doing, rather to spy on them. Okay? So he says, one second, Nimsalim Alila. So that he'll get back on, so he'll spy on them to their father. Okay? V'yishaer hu levado baruch mi banim. What do they think Yosef is doing? They think he is trying to
get the bracha.
V'yishaer hu levado. He himself will be alone. Think about that circle. What's Yosef trying to do?
Push them
out of the circle. Vayitnaklu oto. They self-conspired themselves on him. What did they do? They placed the conspiracy against themselves on him. They said, we're not trying to push him out. He's trying to push us out. Very deep reading of the words. Really deep. Right. We're the victims. When it's not us. It's not us doing it to him. He's doing it to us. Therefore, these guys were the Shiftei Ka, right? These are the Tzadikim Gemurim. How could they do that? We're ignoring the huge question. How in the world could these people, Yaakov's sons, supposedly religious, spiritual people, do this? Right? Hinei higid hakatuv. The Torah tells us, ki tzayru bilibam. Litzayer means to draw in their heart. Vechashvu et Yosef lenochel umbitnakesh benafsham lahamitam. They created this picture in their heart where Yosef was trying to kill them. Be'olam hazeh, o be'olam haba, o bishnehem. They decided, we're not the perpetrator here. We're the victim. Either in this world or the next world. V'ha-Torah amra, the Torah says, haba lahargecha, hashkem lahargo. We didn't push him out of the picture. We didn't push him out of our circle. He's pushing us out of the circle. Here he comes, that dreamer, the one who told us that we'd be out. What's he going to do now?
Self-defense.
That's right. We have to defend ourselves. They created that picture in their heart. When do people go astray? When do they decide to do things that are just so off the grid? When they rationalize to themselves that I'm the one that's in the right and everybody else is in the wrong. Yes. Yes, I am. You understand what I'm saying? We're the only ones that understand the true value of things in the world. Everybody else is, they just don't get it. They're wasting it on roads or art projects or supporting the gays. Whatever you want to tell yourself, you could tell yourself. But if they only understood what we understood, they would be begging us to have more students in to support our yeshiva. Would you rather the yeshiva close? Would you rather these families, you know, whatever, starve? If only they understood what we understand, they'd be begging us to give us more money, to be knocking down our door. So in order to do that, we have to do what we have to do. Because they don't understand. Right? Naklu oto lahamito. Right? They push the conspiracies back on the other person. Anyone who really engages in a kind of conspiratorial behavior has to, if they consider themselves, you know, it's very interesting. I'll read one more midrash and we'll stop. Right? Ma betzen ergen chen, who says Yehuda. Right? It's interesting. They sat down to eat. Amar lem Yehuda, bahim la harog. You come to kill somebody. Umuvarchim la kadosh baruch hu. He says, they went to eat and they came to bench. And you just said, we have to bench. And we're going to sell our brother? There's like a disconnect, right? What is it called? Cognitive dissonance. So he says, no, let's go sell him instead. You know what I'm saying? We can't do that. We can't kill him. Let's go sell him instead. I don't know how selling him was better, but at least we're not killing him. There's this conflict. In order to justify your behavior, you have to find a way to say, I'm still the religious person that I am, and I'm doing this because they don't understand, because they're on the outside. Doesn't make it right.
So how do you explain what Yaakov did with Esau?
What Yaakov, what do you mean, what Yaakov did with
stealing the bracha?
His mother told him to do it. How do you explain that his mother told him to do it?
Yeah.
You know, where I was thinking today, I was actually thinking this morning, where does it all start? Where does it all start? Where does it all go back to? What?
To
Rivka. It starts with Rivka. Well, she went to a Navi. It's not clear the way. She was a Navi. And what did Chazal say? What did Chazal say? Why did it say? It says, excuse me, what did Chazal say? It says, when they wanted children, it says,
right.
In one corner, and she in one corner, and it says that he was answered. Why was he answered?
He was a tzaddik ben tzaddik.
And she was? What are you going to do? Not fair. That's where it starts. It starts with Avraham Avinu saying, it starts with Avraham saying, go get somebody from over there. So all these things, they do go back, but it builds on itself. It's interesting. And Chazal see the long term in this. They see the midrashim about Yosef. When Yosef is sold, Chazal say, that just the history of the Jewish people
cosmic.
Almost, right, what?
Cosmic effects.
The sale, the Asara Haruge Malchut, if you look in some of the more esoteric sources, you know, the 10, what?
You spoke about it last year.
I don't know.
The karma,
right. That things are set in place. And when I read that, I think about to myself, like, I think about what are we setting in place for the future, for our own future, and how careful you have to be, how lightly you have to tread, in a sense, you know, trying to nurture the in, who's out. Okay, we'll stop here.